gosh, 115 degrees, can you imagine? I hope people drink a lot of water. I hope people have access to water. I hope people help people out who don't have access to water. I hope people help the elders out who check in on them. If you have neighbors who may not have the air conditioning resources, bring them things that they need. We need to support each other through these coming week, which is looking like it might be a very difficult one for us here. We are getting a taste of the Southwest, which we are not used to. All right, well, I've got a program page at kbo.fm, Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm going to throw in a bunch of these articles I've talked about and some others, so you can have some references if you're interested. That's about all I got to say. Thank you, Sonia, for running the board. And have a good rest of your day. Stay tuned to KBOO. Bye-bye.
This is KBOO Portland.
Want an impactful way to volunteer for KBOO? Believe in KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change? Then apply to be a member of the KBOO Board of Directors. Our KBOO Board guides our strategic work and represents the interests and visions of all our members. There is a time commitment of about 15 hours a month for all board members, and you must be a KBOO member. To apply, go to kbu.fm and fill out an application. If you need a paper copy mailed to you, call the station or email applicationboard@kbu.org. That's one word, applicationboard@kbu.org. The deadline to apply is July 25th, 2021.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Today we are going to focus on the homeless youth that struggle in our county. Our guest today from the Home Plate Agency. As the website says, do you know Home Plate is Washington County's only nonprofit provider of drop-in centers and street outreach for young people experiencing homelessness? Now our listeners know. Our guests are Jason Green, a board member of the organization and co-founder and assistant director of Homeless Research and Action Collaborative from the Portland State University. Along with Jason, we have Bridget Kelfi, Home Plate's executive director. She has been with the agency for over 15 years and in fact is its founding director. Bridget holds a master's degree of social work from Portland State University. We'll explore issues of homelessness in our state and county with an emphasis on youth, and our guests will share some very exciting news for the agency and the clients they serve. More about that soon. Welcome, Jason and Bridget. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us today.
Very much our pleasure. Getting right into the questions, what do you folks, both of you, see as the main causes of being houseless or homeless in our state and county for people of all ages? And do the causes, just to throw two out at you at once, do the causes differ for the young people you serve?
Maybe I could talk about homelessness in general, and then Bridget could talk a little bit more about the young people that Home Plate serves. So, you really could boil it down to just people are experiencing homelessness because they're unable to afford or access housing. And there are so many reasons why that might be the case. Every experience of homelessness is unique. Everybody has sort of a different path into it. different experience of it. So I think it's really important to keep that in mind when we're talking about people experiencing homelessness, is that they're not monolithic. We don't want to stereotype or group them all together. We want to sort of honor those individual experiences and their own identities as well. What we can say from the research is that in areas with a lack of affordable housing, homelessness is much higher than in other areas. And as rents increase, homelessness tends to go up as well. You see disproportionate homelessness among communities of color, and that is directly linked to racism. So you see really, really high rates of housing insecurity and homelessness among African-American and Native American communities. And that's tied really closely to legacies of discrimination in housing, in mortgage applications, in employment, in education, and the disproportionate rates of arrest and incarceration that we see with our Black neighbors and our Native American neighbors, that also drives homelessness. Somebody who has been repeatedly incarcerated is 13 times more likely to be homeless than somebody who hasn't, because it makes it so much harder to find a job, to secure housing once you have that record. People who are experiencing homelessness are also much, much more likely to be targeted by the police. And this is true of people of all ages who are experiencing homelessness. In Portland alone, in 2017, about half of all arrests were of people experiencing homelessness, even though they're probably less than 3% of the population. So what you see is that police are often targeting people experiencing homelessness. They can't pay court fees. They might not even be able to make it to court. These citations and fines pile up. They end up getting convictions. They get incarcerated. They get let out. They have nowhere to go, and the cycle continues. Some people are unable to afford housing because they have a severe mental illness or substance abuse disorder that makes them really hard for them to sort of find the stability they need. But that's really a minority of people experiencing homelessness. It's much, much lower than most people think. It's a little bit more than a third of the people experiencing unsheltered homelessness in the city of Portland. And those rates are even lower elsewhere. Unfortunately, somebody who has a severe mental illness is probably going to be much more visible when they're experiencing homelessness, much more noticeable. And so people tend to associate that with homelessness in a way that isn't really accurate. But we still need those kind of services for people who need to recover from a substance abuse disorder or who need support dealing with a mental illness to make certain that they can sort of be safe and stable in housing. And the last thing I want to say is that housing is the pathway out of homelessness. Housing is a solution. Research shows again, again, and again that the most important thing you can do for someone experiencing homelessness is just get them into housing as quickly as possible, without barriers, without preconditions. And that makes it so much easier for them to access the services and supports that they need to, you know, find a job, to seek treatment if they need it, to connect with community, to really be successful and stable. But you got to get people into housing first.
It's what you're saying to me is that housing is the foundation for pretty much everything else for a healthy life.
Absolutely.
That's certainly the way I hear it. Bridget, how about the population you serve? Do you see differences in what brings them to you, and who are they?
Yeah, I would echo everything that Jason has said. The number one reason we see young people, we serve ages 12 to 24 at Home Plate. The number one reason is lack of affordable housing, that the wages they have do not match what they can afford in rent. And so we see that for kind of our older population, those that are working age, kind of 16 and above, 16 to 24. And so maybe one thing that's special to youth is like less of an employment history. So the employment that they're able to secure is more of an entry level job, which is minimum wage, which doesn't equal the amount that affordable housing is. And that just the lack of it. Often we have to put our youth on mile-long wait lists for the small amount of units that are available for affordable housing. The other thing that I would add would just be sometimes the family situations around young people coming out as part of the lesbian, gay, transgender community and not being accepted by their parents. So ultimately asking, and that's disproportionately represented in the houseless population as well. And then another one would be a pregnancy that would not be looked upon as their family and asked to leave. So that's another situation that we see in the younger population, of reasons why people are not with their families.
And when you bring up the pregnancy, it's interesting to me because basically your clients are coming to you as individuals, with the exceptions of perhaps those that have brought their own family, but their parents, their brothers and sisters, should they have them, aren't involved with them at all, again, for whatever reason, that there's been a breakup in the relationship. Is that fair?
Sometimes it's just a financial breakup. You know, oftentimes it's like the spectrum of how we see you. Sometimes they are still with their families and still connected, but can't be financially supported. That's like, you know, of poverty and lack of affordable housing. And so their families of origin can't house them. But they're still connected emotionally. And then we see the way end of this other spectrum where there has been a very kind of traumatic or abuse in that situation. And the youth are not connected to their family of origin.
Understood. In the latest data I was able to find, and it was either 2017 or 2018, I'm not quite sure, that's on me, but what I read was that the top three school districts with homeless student numbers in Oregon are Beaverton School District, and at the time, with 1,971 recorded, and I stress that recorded, Medford with 1,251, and the Portland School District with 1,217. It seems to me, folks, that Beaverton has had the record for highest number of homeless youth for at least 10 years that I'm aware of. Why does Washington County's Beaverton maintain the number one spot?
I think it's a couple of reasons. I think that Beaverton, and I would just make the note that it's homeless students, not homeless youth. So in some ways, Beaverton is doing a great job of keeping these young people engaged in the school system, which is hard to do when you're in a crisis mode of not knowing where you're going to sleep at night. And so I think that that is part of it, that they're doing a good job keeping young people in school and supporting them. So knowing who they are, knowing, you know, when they tell their teacher, there's a very good pathway to connecting them to supportive services that they're eligible for when they're in these houseless and doubled up situations. So I think that's the case. I think there's been a lot of, you know, big business in the area and less of affordable housing in this region. And in Washington County, homelessness looks more invisible. In an urban setting, it's easier to see and know what's happening. And in Washington County, it's harder to see and easier to miss if you're hopping in your car and going to work. And so the problem can be shocking because it's not as visible.
Understood. I'm wondering if you find from, again, the homeless students and youth that come to you, are many of them escaping Multnomah County or are most of them Washington County folks?
Most are Washington County folks.
Okay. I was just curious because, again, you make a good point of the difference. If I were homeless, I think I'd rather be homeless in Beaverton than in Portland, especially these days. But that's another comment for another question for another time. Do your clients, and this one is directed mostly to you, Bridget, do your clients experience prejudice and abuse in the community simply due to their homelessness status? And if so, how do you help them to try and fight that?
Yes, they do. I think they're experiencing a few things. You know, I think sometimes we have really supportive community members that are looking out for folks and being very generous and offering resources. But there's absolutely the flip side of discrimination from community members based on the way they look and the way that they are using parks and being outside. People look at that differently than the way you or I would use a park and things like that. So we work with them. You know, the way we work with Youth at Home Plate is really individualized, that we're working with them to, you know, have them tell us what they need. How do they define stability for themselves and what do they need to get there? And then we can help them kind of navigate those complex systems of getting work, getting childcare, you know, whatever it is that they're kind of defining that lands their stability. Often housing is part of that equation. And we do that in an individualized way. So if they're expressing they're feeling discrimination or need some kind of advocacy support, we can help them find their voice or work with them to accompany them to appointments or talk to their any kind of folks in their life that they're needing more advocacy for around discrimination for what they're needing.
And one of the things is you talk about them being discriminated because of resources they use, because of how they look. I'm thinking in terms of part of stability, of course, is employment, and I understand the foundation of having a home is important. But do you help them to prepare for interviews for potential employment where they could in fact face that discrimination? Or even if they don't, they still might not have gained the skills at this point in their life to do a successful interview. Is that something that you can help them with?
Yeah, absolutely. HomePlate has a youth employment program where we have career coaches that work with youth on all aspects of finding employment, resume building, job search, job placement, preparing for interviews. We also have life skills classes that youth can attend to work on some of those aspects like interview prep. And we have volunteers from the community that come and offer those services. So we, you know, it's kind of this village approach that we're all kind of working together to provide more opportunities that they weren't naturally provided in their life.
Yeah. Understood. Excellent. More for Jason, if you don't mind. I'm just wondering, this program does a lot of good work. Where does the money come from? How are the services funded, Jason?
Well, I think Bridget could answer this just as well, but there's government funding, there's state funding, funding from the city. You know, there are a lot of really generous, supportive local donors, individual donors, different companies, foundations in the area. What I've seen is that Bridget has done a fantastic job identifying and bringing in funding from a huge variety of sources. And I think it makes HomePlate more successful, and I think it makes HomePlate more resilient because there are so many different sources of funding that the organization is able to draw on, so that if there's one area that is more challenging for a while to get funding from, you know, often there are other areas where you can find some funding instead of just relying on one source.
Well, understood. All eggs in one basket has been proven to be a pretty poor choice, by all means. Is there anything more that you'd like us to know, Bridget, about how the funding works for HomePlate?
Yeah, no, there's grants that we write, just like Jason said, kind of government support, foundation support, and then individuals are kind of the three main groups. And I don't know if you want to talk about the supportive housing service measure of like a new funding structure for affordable housing, both the Metro bond for affordable housing, but also the supportive services that are coming with it. We have like a real opportunity to end homelessness in this region with this new funding source coming in. So we hope to be a partner as well as lots of other organizations too.
Excellent. That sounds very, very exciting. Nonprofits struggle generally at the best of times. I know that you guys have been doing very well, or quite well, and we'll get to some of that too in a second. But you know, as difficult as it is in general, this pandemic that we're now seemingly coming out of has really impacted a lot of agencies very powerfully. Has the pandemic impacted your work with clients? I'm asking both of you.
Yeah, absolutely. We at HomePlate, we have a really relational model. That's how we do our work, is building trust with young people, just being with them, spending time with them, is how we can, through this relationship and conversation, find out what they need and provide resources and services. And the pandemic has impacted in so many ways. It's really impacted how long we can be with youth, how distanced and masked, and just like some of those social distancing measures we've taken very seriously and followed, and it's really impacted how we can interact with youth. It's become a little bit more transactional, so we're really happy that the world is opening back up and we're able to. We've been vaccinate our staff as well as offer it to the young people, and so we're hopeful for that model to. We've kind of like hung on through this, and we've stayed open, and we haven't had any positive COVID cases, and we've been able to work through this. But we're really excited to get back to our core philosophy of how we work with young people.
But did your numbers go down during this pandemic time?
They did, yeah. We had to pause some of our drop-in centers due to we share space with other organizations like churches, and we didn't have control of our space, so we had to pause it out of unknown. We've been since able to reopen our Hillsborough site, and what we did was consolidate our services to our headquarter location in Beaverton, and we're open for longer. But what we saw was more youth coming more often, so a deeper service for the ones that really needed it. And then we were able to serve kind of youth from afar virtually in some ways and connect with them. But yeah, we kind of all hands on deck for our headquarters center to keep our office, those office hours open. And it changed our model that we were delivering food to youth at the back door. So more hands on. And so our street outreach program was paused as well, or limited. And that's where we really see the most youth. People were just less out and about. So yeah, I would say we saw youth more deeply, the ones that did come, but our overall numbers did dip this year, last year.
Understood. Great. I understand that your organization has made a huge investment that can help lay a strong foundation for your future. And in the world of nonprofits, we all know that that's very important. In fact, for those listening to our show today on the radio on Wednesday, June 23rd, there's a celebration this very evening. If you're listening later, you've missed it. If you're listening before the 23rd, put it on your calendar. Can you guys tell our listeners what's happening on the 23rd? What is this wonderful investment that I'm referring to?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Yeah, so HomePlant is for 16 years, and we've always been in free or rental spaces. And we've been looking for a more permanent location where we can sink our roots down deeper in the community, and the youth need us to grow to meet scratching the surface of what capacity there is for the services. And so we have a new building that we are renovating to use for our services. And so on June 23rd from 3 to 5 p.m. will be our groundbreaking services or celebration. This is right before construction will start. And we are thrilled. It's going to be a new headquarter where we'll have a commercial kitchen, be able to provide cooking classes to young people, as well as a kitchen for volunteers to provide food as well, two ADA showers. The whole building will be accessible, and we're just kind of thrilled about the space, just having carved out space where we can more socially distance better, as well as just serve more youth.
Well, while I hope the social distancing isn't a lifetime thing for us, I get the point. I get it very well. If folks want to attend and share your joy, where is it?
Yeah, the new location is just a block from our location now. So it's at 12685 Southwest 4th. It's really like 4th and Angel or 4th and Watson.
In what's euphemistically called downtown Beaverton, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's a yellow kind of half-finished building right now. So.
And it's just back off the street, right?
Yeah, it's just off Watson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's close to the Beaverton Market. Probably very, very busy on Saturdays, but that's another point. I don't know how to ask this, but I have to. In a tough time of pandemics, in a time that pretty much all social agencies are struggling for money and to be able to provide services, how were you able to get the funds, to get the resources to put this marvelous investment together?
We have been planning for years to have a location. So the HomePlant board and staff have worked very hard to be ready for this moment when it was available. And we've been looking for years, and it just so happened it happened during the pandemic. But at the beginning, we thought, can we do a capital campaign in the middle of a pandemic? Mm-hmm. We didn't know. And it turns out it's been, the community has responded, and there's been a couple kind of one-time government sources that were unexpected that we that's really launched the project. But yeah, we will continue to raise funds and are starting, launching the campaign on the 23rd is really like the We welcome support of the community to continue, and are thrilled that people, once they know about this issue in their community, that know some of the solutions of how to help youth return to stability much faster.
Thank you. And I want to thank you both for being with us today, but I'm going to give you one last question that's a little more challenging. Jason, we'll start with you, but I'd appreciate both of you answering. It's been troubling me for years, so I thought I'd ask you. Is homelessness for some people, youth and others, a necessary evil in our culture? Or is it possible to find an effective way to eliminate homelessness, if not in our country, in our county?
I think homelessness is absolutely something that we could eliminate if we wanted to, and we invested enough to do that. There are communities around the country that have already effectively eliminated homelessness through a lot of effort and a lot of investment. You know, homelessness in the U.S., if you look at the numbers, it goes up and down over time, depending on how much support there is in government, what policies are, how much affordable housing is available, especially. So homelessness is not a sort of a natural condition. Homelessness is a result of the decisions that we make as a society. And I think that we could certainly decide that we don't believe anybody should be forced to live on the street. And if we make that decision, we know how to end homelessness. We know what needs to be done. We just have to have the political willpower and the public investments to make that happen.
Bridget, your thoughts?
I agree. I think homelessness is a traumatic, ongoing traumatic experience for the folks who experience it, as well as our whole society. And I think I agree with Jason that if we had the resources or redistributed the resources, we could solve it in our county is a place to start doing that. So I think there are some hopeful things coming through Washington County that will make a big dent. And I feel like it's a real opportunity to end homelessness because, yeah, like Jason said, there are communities that have done this, ended homelessness or ended veteran homelessness if they focus on a certain population. And I often get asked, is homelessness a choice? Do people choose it? And I would say I haven't met a person that has chosen homelessness. Especially when using the mental health definition of that if it's a choice, then the alternative was not really a choice of what they were facing on the other end. So yeah, I don't think it is a necessary evil. I would love to work ourselves out of a job and a business and that's our vision at HomePlate, is that homelessness would be, if it existed, would be a very short-term circumstance and people would return to stability. Thank you.
May the dream come true. Jason, Bridget, thank you very, very much for joining us today. Folks, this is our last new broadcast for the season. We'll be back with new shows the very week after Labor Day. We'll continue to bring important issues to your ears on our website, on internet radio, and on our FM stations. During the time off, KBOO and X-Ray may choose to broadcast encore episodes, and if you're looking to research an issue that relates to our county, or just want to listen to something interesting, please go to our website at insidewashco.org. That's insidewashco.org. You'll find access to over 50 shows from the past 2 years. Listening is free, and sending us feedback at my email, rob@insidewashco.org, that doesn't cost anything either. We thank our radio stations for their support and our listeners for listening. And I want to thank our producer, Mark Berry, for a job exceedingly well done. Have an excellent summer, Washington County, and we'll see you in September.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Mark.
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
Can't get good reception of KBOO on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
This is Roger Fisher from Heart You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Tell your friends to listen on in and support the mass movement of the human tribe.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are in the world, on the internet at KBOO.FM, or maybe you're listening to us on Spotify, or maybe it's 9:30 in the morning on a Wednesday in Portland, Oregon, on KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM. This is Culture in Motion, your twice monthly show where my co-host Ryan Danley and I talk about the intersections between art, culture, music, politics, and activism. What's up, man?
Not too much, man. How you doing?
It's Father's Day on the month of Pride in the pandemic on the solstice, right after Juneteenth. So there's a lot of kind of symbolic stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, like, I kind of like, I'm like, this year I'm kind of not even like messing with Father's Day. My kids are out and I'm good with it. Like, they're, you know, my daughter's been going to Pride all the last Father's Days anyways, and which is like, I'm super stoked about, and I'm just glad that, you know, she's out there. And you know, like, for me anymore, it's like Father's Day is just about like what kind of brush am I clearing for them, you know? It's not about me, it's more about them and what I can do for them. Being a dad, like, I mean, like, I dig it. It's been easy. I like it. Like, I got an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old, and my daughter's doing really great, and my they-them kid is, they are just wicked awesome. And so it's just, you know what I mean? Like, I don't spend too much time worrying about me being a dad, and especially with everything going on in this world. So I'm just glad that I've had the opportunity. You know?
Real talk, give thanks, man. And that's just, yep. I just want to take a nap today. That's all I have. So that's about to happen after the show. But we have a very special guest today. Shrista Tyree, what is good?
What's up? What's up? How you doing? How y'all doing?
We're good.
I'm happy to have you on Culture in Motion.
Yeah, let's set it off. I ain't got the Queen Latifah braid, so I ain't setting it off.